The Burj Al Babas project was intended to be a luxury housing development around a shopping mall and hotel, but it became a tragic symbol of Turkey's falling lira. This half-built fairy tale development of hundreds of Disney-style castles sitting empty in western Turkey after the company went bankrupt. But at a meeting in an Istanbul court Friday, a majority of creditors of the firm voted for it to continue building at the complex using company capital and assets.
This Sunday, Super Bowl ads are finally catching up to the fact that about half of the game's viewers are women. Serena Williams, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and a young athlete who aspires to be the NFL's first female player are among those featured in this year's spots, which are all about empowerment. Case in point, Serena Williams' spot for Bumble, the dating app in which women pursue men.
Queen Elizabeth has weighed in on the somewhat uncouth political brawl that's tearing her kingdom apart. She didn't mention Brexit, but all understood a speech she gave Thursday as royal speak for Stop One's Bickering. The Queen told a Women's Institute meeting off camera she preferred that people speak well of each other, respect different points of view, seek common ground, and never lose sight of the bigger picture.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's February the 4th and 5:11 in the morning. Good morning, and thanks for joining us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day and another business week getting underway. We appreciate you tuning in. Of course, we'll continue to monitor news, weather, and sports through the whole hour today and bring you the very latest intel from around the world on the markets. On the program today, the subject is Foxconn front and center. We'll talk to Dale Buss about what Foxconn's plans are in Wisconsin. They've changed a little over the last few days. We'll bring in Dale momentarily. A little bit later in the program, younger adults in America are said to be drinking less. We'll take a dive into that as well to find out why and what perhaps they are drinking. That'll be at about 5:40 this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures are up just a fraction each. In Europe, markets are generally mixed, with the markets in London higher, everything else generally lower. The CAC in France off by nearly 0.5%. In Asia, markets are generally in the green, with the Shanghai up as much as 0.33%. And oil in the U.S. is at $55.39 a barrel, which is up about 13 cents. Couple of stories before we begin this morning. Businesses and organizations with unsecured debt against Sears will begin making their case in court today. They're protesting Sears CEO Eddie Lambert's $5.2 billion buyout of the retailer. Creditors include the federal oversight organization that guarantees Sears pensions, which is underfunded by more than $1 billion. The group says Lambert's deal to buy the 126-year-old company would kill an agreement he made in 2015 to fill pension losses with royalty fees from Sears' valuable Kenmore, Craftsman, and DieHard brands. The hearing runs today and through Wednesday. The layoffs GM announced in November are about to begin. The auto giant plans to start laying off 4,000 salaried workers today. It marks the beginning of an overall effort to reduce the company's North American workforce by about 15%. GM claims it's trying to free up $6 billion annually so it can invest that money into a new generation of vehicles, including electric and self-driving cars. It also plans to develop a ride-hailing service. And the Super Bowl is now history, but I bet you spent a little bit of money on it. According to experts, total spending surrounding this year's Super Bowl came in at about $14.8 billion this year. That includes about $81 per person in the United States who spent money on things like party decorations, food, and liquor for their Super Bowl parties. Let's begin front and center this morning with Foxconn. A report last week that perhaps it was scaling back its plans for a manufacturing plant in southeast Wisconsin. There are some new developments to the story. After a meeting with the White House, it appears that perhaps Foxconn has clarified its move forward. Let's bring in Dale Buss, a contributor for Forbes, the Wall Street Journal, and Chief Executive Magazine for more on this. Dale, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
So what is the latest headline? I know that some of the executives of Foxconn had a conversation with the White House. Have they clarified what they're doing?
Well, they haven't clarified it as much as kind of reversed course on the report that came out last week that they were scaling back. It's still pretty muddy, and this whole thing is still not really clear at all. I think what the clarification came in the form of, hey, Terry Gou, CEO of Foxconn, this is Donald Trump, President of the United States, and remember a couple of years ago we talked about this plan in Wisconsin, and I made a big deal out of it. I put a lot of political capital on the line, you know, celebrating this whole thing. There are going to be 13,000 Made in America jobs in Wisconsin, and I came out and broke ground with you and Governor Scott Walker at the time, and what's up with this? What's up with this report that you're going to be scaling back? So almost as quickly as the report came out last week saying that Foxconn was going to be scaling back its plans in the state, and that would include many fewer manufacturing jobs than it had agreed to, no sooner had that happened than President Trump called Terry Gou on the phone and said, I think you're going to do what you said you're going to do. And Trump on Friday tweeted about it and said, this is a great thing once again. So that's kind of the circle that this has taken. And where we're back at is a position where it just isn't clear exactly how many of these jobs are going to materialize. It was supposed to be 13,000, mostly manufacturing jobs for about $4 billion in subsidies, which is very rich. So we're not sure how many of those will be manufacturing jobs, only that Foxconn has said, all right, we're going to stick with our original commitment to the state.
The statement from Foxconn, Reuters had this over the weekend as well, that said that this campus will serve both as an advanced manufacturing facility as well as a hub of high technology innovation for the region. That makes it sound like there's going to be a mix of both of those blue-collar and high-paid engineering jobs.
Right. Well, all the jobs are going to be pretty well-paying, up in the upper 50,000s, I think, in terms of an average. But what's happened are a couple of things. Foxconn is reacting, number one, to economics of this deal that a lot of people said were pretty shaky from the start. Foxconn said it was going to build big glass sheets, as screens for TVs and that kind of thing. The problem with that is that is a very precise sort of technological ecosystem that only exists in a few places in Asia, involving a whole cluster of suppliers and other factories around the main plant. And that's just not something that's ever been replicated in the United States. And when Foxconn was indicating this is the kind of thing we're going to do in Wisconsin, there just were a lot of doubters that it would ever be done. Well, lo and behold, Foxconn previously had said, well, I think what we're going to do is make smaller screens in Wisconsin, maybe for laptops and phones and that sort of thing. So that's one thing that, this pressure that has continued to bear on Foxconn is, what are we doing here? Can we even do this in the United States? And the second thing is Foxconn has gotten caught in the whole trade whirlwind where its biggest business of making iPhones for Apple in China has really taken a dive because of the lack of interest in new iPhones by consumers in China and also the trade pressures that President Trump has brought to bear on the Chinese economy. So these factors have made Foxconn want to rethink its commitment to Wisconsin, which of course does not sit very well with President Trump or people in Wisconsin.
And the question again about this meeting, at least the phone call with President Trump, is whether or not he promised any further things to sweeten the deal for Foxconn. That remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't know that there are any substantial reports that he did that. Who knows? It's possible he's the president. He does what he wants, but the thing is, the deal already is so sweet for Foxconn, the way some analysts see it, that it would be hard to get more generous. I mean, and this was brought up at the time. Scott Walker, who was governor of Wisconsin at the time, really wanted this deal badly. He relied on his personal relationship with Terry Gou, the CEO of Foxconn. He wanted to turn the state into a technology hub, you know, and have an impact beyond just the Foxconn facility in the southeastern part of the state in Racine County. He talked about creating Wisconn Valley. And, you know, he kind of spun this as a huge dream. Well, it didn't help him very much politically, in part because the cost was said by his critics to have been way too rich. For example, one stat, somebody figured out that the $4 billion would amount to about 17% of the wages that were going to be paid to manufacturing workers by Foxconn versus about a 3% average for other state economic development deals that, you know, states have made over the years for this kind of a facility. So, and he let them off the hook in terms of some environmental regulations and some other things. So it's already, they're already getting quite a bit in exchange for these, this pledge of 13,000 jobs eventually.
Dale, I'm curious, the before Friday, these Taiwanese company, Foxconn, said that it was pretty expensive to hire workers in the United States. They've already delayed a plant in China. And then there was this controversy in Wisconsin. How nervous would do the folks who are in charge of this in southeast Wisconsin have to be going forward?
Well, they have to be pretty nervous, in part because, as you mentioned, Foxconn has just indicated really almost immediately after the groundbreaking that they were hesitant about a lot of aspects of this. And one of this, and one of them was, as you indicated, the idea that maybe we really can't find enough people to staff this facility, whatever direction we go, whether it's in terms of advanced manufacturing, meaning mostly blue-collar folks, or whether it's more technical bent, meaning engineers and software scientists and all that. I mean, Wisconsin is not a hotbed. Sure, in Chicago, not far away, if Foxconn plant was going to be located in the Loop, you'd have a decent chance of staffing these jobs. But Wisconsin doesn't have enough of those people, nor is the infrastructure needed to train a bunch of these people up and running enough yet. I mean, the state is trying to do that in part with help from Foxconn. And Foxconn indicated at one point it was going to have to be importing workers from China, technical workers, in order to handle all this. So, and of course, that raised a lot of alarm that, well, what have we gotten into here? A Chinese-owned plant in Wisconsin that's going to be staffed by Chinese technical people. So that's another area of difficulty. And, you know, it looks basically what happened here is Governor Walker, his eyes are bigger than his stomach in terms of being able to lure this kind of a hot property, and it's just not working out the way he or President Trump had hoped at this point. And, you know, with the economics maybe having changed or become more apparent to Foxconn, there's only so much that they can do as a business to accommodate, you know, the desires of President Trump and even the commitments that they made to Wisconsin. So it's just going to bear a lot of watching in the months ahead.
Yeah, for the folks in southeast Wisconsin, this is obviously a big concern. But given this conversation, too, with the president, there's a lot on the line here for him, given that we're just another year away from election again. What does he stand to lose if this doesn't materialize as he hoped?
Well, in general, he has staked so much of his reputation as an economic wonderkind on things like the Foxconn plant, on getting CEOs, whether they're domestic or foreign, to make manufacturing jobs materialize in this country. And so that's a big deal for him, and particularly in Wisconsin, which was one of the key states to put Trump over the top in 2016. Polls show, you know, it's a shaky proposition at best now, and if he can't get Foxconn to deliver on their promises, and he and Walker are together on this, in the eyes of Wisconsin voters, it's going to be trouble for him in this state for sure.
We have about 30 or so seconds left. I'm wondering, does the new governor, Tony Evers, have anything to do with maybe renegotiating this? How do you foresee his role in any of this?
Well, Evers was careful in the campaign. He made it clear he was not happy with how much he felt the state had given away to Foxconn. But he didn't, you know, condemn the project or anything. He just kind of let it speak for itself because the headlines were helping him during the election campaign. I mean, he would, I think, like to see it occur in its full blossoming, but he is not going to, you know, do anything extra to try to rescue it either. I think what he has said is he wants to keep Foxconn accountable, and I think that's where the whole thing is at, is how do you keep them accountable? How do you get them to do what they said they were going to do? It's going to be a difficult thing.
Neil, a good chat this morning. Thanks for being on with us.
All right. Thank you.
Have a great day. Neil Buss, contributor at Forbes Wall Street Journal, Chief Executive Magazine, on with us with the latest on the Foxconn, Wisconsin situation.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. The latest stats show young adults are drinking less alcohol, but they are still drinking, and the world's largest spirits company seems to be benefiting from their shifting tastes toward whiskey and tequila. Joining us this morning is Rupert Steiner, a European Bureau Chief for MarketWatch. Rupert, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I was going to say we should be talking about a cup of warm English tea rather than chilled cocktails, but your big freeze is now over in Chicago, is it?
It is, but you know what? Feel free to drop a little vodka or whiskey into your coffee and tea this morning. I think that would be appropriate given our conversation.
I think I'll leave that to you.
So tell us about this. This is an interesting story. The company we're talking about is the company behind Smirnoff Vodka and also Crown Royal, a bunch of other brands as well. What are they benefiting from, and why are millennials drinking differently?
It is. Diageo is the biggest spirits company in the world. It owns Smirnoff, owns Johnny Walker Whiskey. And I think it's known that millennials are drinking less. But when they are drinking, they're not drinking beer and wine, they're drinking spirits. So what Diageo, and I wrote a report in MarketWatch last week on Diageo's results, and they showed that they'd benefited from more millennials drinking their brands of tequila and of whiskey.
What do you think's behind that? Is it the fancy drinks, the different kinds of cocktail mixing that is so popular these days? Does that have anything to do with it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So what it is there's a huge amount of excitement in the category in spirits that just isn't seen in beer and wine. So with tequila, you've got Diageo buying something called Casamigos, which is a tequila brand that's co-founded by George Clooney. So you've got celebrity, and it's a little bit different. They've even, like with Johnny Walker, brought out a Game of Thrones bottle of Johnny Walker called, I think, White Walker. Again, which is sort of taps into sort of popular culture, and it's something that the millennials love. And that bottle, if you put it in the freezer, the label actually changes; it reacts with the cold. So again, it's a little bit sort of I hate this word, experiential. So it gives something that, again, a bottle of beer, I'm not going to mention the brands, but the others just aren't doing.
Yeah, and you know, we've covered this before. It's this mixology craze that's going on. Talk to us about the numbers, though, and this company specifically. I don't think a lot of people know that Diageo has all of these brands. They had a 6% jump, was it? And so, how does that fit in overall in their company and their revenue?
So for North America, it accounts for 34% of Diageo's net sales. It's a sizable chunk. In North America, again, Scotch grew 10%. This is over the half year, and the vodka sales were a bit flat. They also own Ketel One, and they own Captain Morgan Rum. I know we're not talking about beer, but they also are the company behind Guinness.
Captain Morgan Rum, it seems we see a lot of those commercials on television, so they've been pushing that. It seems surprising that that is lower.
I mean, they're having to push Captain. Unfortunately, Captain Morgan Rum is actually one of their weakest. It saw net sales decline 9%. So I think the reason you're seeing a lot of it on television is because they're trying to throw a lot of marketing at reversing that sales drop.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about the marketing part of this. Given the stats that this company's seeing, how does that change the marketing going forward? What are we likely to see?
Well, the key thing is that millennials can really sort of make or break firms. So they're spending a lot of money marketing to millennials because there are 80 million millennials in America, and they're the largest demographic. And they're not even at peak spending in their lives, because at the age that they're at now, a lot of them are still paying off their education. A lot of them are starting families. So what brands are trying to do is get millennials loyalty now, so that when they've got the most amount to spend, they're already spending on these brands, and that firms like Diageo will be able to benefit.
And for the beer folks, I mean, this is the numbers you mentioned there are concerning too, and I know your story goes into more detail on that. There was a time in the mid-90s where there was about 61% of people were beer drinkers, were drinking beer. It's now down to about 49%. That's certainly not the death knell for beer, but those folks have to be pretty concerned.
They have, and I think we're seeing a lot of craft beer. Certainly in the UK we are, and I think you are also in the States seeing a lot more sort of niche craft beers. And what some of the big brewers are trying to do is either buy these up or organically develop their own. I think millennials are more likely to buy beer brands that aren't the sort of big mass market ones. So if the big brewers are able to get brands that don't look like they're owned by the big brewers, then I think that's a way forward for them.
I know your story talks too about tequila and George Clooney's involvement. His company that was acquired by Diageo. Talk to us about how big star power plays into whether or not people are drinking.
Star power makes a big difference. And the George Clooney brand mixes star power, but with a quality product. So it's key, but it's not everything. So Diageo also owns a brand called Ciroc, which has a relationship with Sean Combs. That actually isn't doing very well. It did do really well, but in the last year or two, Ciroc's, along with Captain Morgan, are the two brands that are performing the worst in the States.
Given all these numbers, Rupert, it's not surprising that a lot of these companies are looking to marijuana. I know there's been a couple of stories here in the United States about somehow mixing liquor with marijuana. Is that what the next thing we're going to see from these companies?
Well, I mean, I asked Ivan Menendez, who's the chief exec of Diageo, what they were doing about marijuana, and they are looking at it, which I suddenly thought, oh, that's a great story, but they're only looking at it to see how it might impact on sales of alcohol. So at present, all they'll say is we're looking at marijuana, but they haven't gone as far as saying that they're looking at doing some kind of product or partnership. And that's different to, say, AB InBev, which I think did a deal with a Canadian company, I can't remember the name, I'm afraid, in the last month or so.
What has the international scene, the trade, the tariffs, all of those things, is any of that impacting on this industry?
Sorry, what do you mean?
The trade war that we see going on in other sectors.
Oh, the trade war, sorry, I didn't hear you.
Is any of that impacting the booze market?
Sort of very localized in the UK, we've got Brexit, and actually Diageo is one of the firms in terms of trade that will benefit from Brexit, because there will be more duty-free sold, And also they'll benefit from WTO rules in terms of the tariffs. So a lot of firms, if when Brexit happens, will have a problem with possibly more duty, but Diageo and spirits firms won't, which means that they're one of the few firms, one of the few industries that will actually benefit from Brexit.
Very good. Rupert, we appreciate you being on with us this morning. We're going to link people out to your most recent story on this, and we appreciate you getting up with us being on this morning.
It's my pleasure. Thanks very much.
Rupert Steiner from MarketWatch. He's the European Bureau Chief for MarketWatch.com. Again, we'll link out to the story. The company highlighted there, Diageo PLC, with the ticker symbol DGE, up nearly 1%. At its last close at $32.50 a share.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market, Dow futures are pointing toward a flat open later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are just up 4 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up barely a point. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, we'll be talking China-U.S. trade negotiations again as we start the trading week, because over the weekend, the South China Morning Post had a story that said China made, quote, important progress toward settling trade disputes with the United States after the countries wrapped up what the newspaper called, quote, frank, concrete and constructive talks in Washington. The Chinese vice premier led a delegation from Beijing for 2 days of talks in Washington, both sides hailing progress on tough issues beyond the trade imbalance between them and are working to make sure they can get it all done by the deadline of March 1st. So we'll keep an eye on how the grain markets react to that today. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, February the 4th. 2 months' worth of motor vehicle sales are due today. December's sales figures were held up by the government shutdown. Auto industry analysts are forecasting 17.3 million vehicles sold in December. They expect to see that 17 million cars and light trucks rolled off the lots in January. Car makers will report their numbers throughout the day. The shutdown delayed November's factory orders report as well. The experts forecasting a 0.3% increase over October. Factory orders coming out midday. On the earnings calendar today, Alphabet and Ryanair. Also, markets in mainland China will be closed all week because of the lunar holiday, the Lunar New Year there, the New Year. So we expect to see very little activity coming from the Chinese markets. This week, Tuesday, the State of the Union Address, earnings from Disney, 21st Century Fox, Electronic Arts, Wednesday, GM, Chipotle, Toyota, the New York Times, Thursday, Twitter, Yum Brands, Kellogg, on Friday, Hasbro, and Phillips 66. So a busy day, a busy week for earnings, plenty of things to move the markets.